Good afternoon. I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for joining me for the 155th edition of New Mainers Speak. This is a weekly half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants. During the show, we visit with individuals regarding their life stories and enduring hopes as New Mainers. Today, my guest is James Swaka, who was born in what is now South Sudan. Orphaned at age 3, James was raised in Uganda by missionaries where he attended school, learning English all the while. At age 15, he went to Kenya, then to Ifo, a refugee camp, before coming to the United States at the age of 16 in 1995. He's created a life for himself and his family here in Maine and in Biddeford with his scrapper-style resistance, hard work, and humor. Welcome to New Mainers Speak, James.
Hi, my name is James Swaka, and thank you for coming here on the show. As you already mentioned, I'm from Southern Sudan, and you can fire me some questions, and I would love to answer them.
Okay, great. So let's start with getting a sense of what your life was like in South Sudan and in Uganda. It's really such a different scene than here. I wonder if you could describe for me some of the smells and the setting in Uganda when you were a boy.
I was born in Southern Sudan, and then at the age of 3, I didn't even know the time I lost my mom, what year that was. So I was brought to Uganda at the age of 3, because my aunt is a nun. But Uganda,
she worked in the missionary center?
She works in the missionary, yeah, as a nun with the Catholic missionaries.
Sure.
Yeah, so she's it's called a sister, basically. Yeah. So.
Your aunt is your sister. That's confusing.
I mean, is a is a sister in the church.
Yes.
Yeah.
So part
we
of the
call
convent.
Her a sister.
Yeah.
Which is funny, isn't it?
It is.
Like, for me to call her a sister.
Yeah, it's ironic.
So I call her aunt sister. I don't know. You know, just
that works.
Yeah. I mean, everything works for me. So I
So what did school look like in Uganda?
Well, school actually, it was you start off in primary school, like primary 1, and then you go up to primary 7. But I was a little bit lucky, even though I lost my parents. It seems like to me, like losing my parents, it was an advantage for myself because it puts me in certain areas that I found it was like I was able to take advantage of things.
You
like
had more opportunities when you moved to Uganda.
Exactly. Uh-huh. Like when I was with the nun, I mean, they will teach me English before even I go to the classes. I'm aware of what to expect, while other kids are still scratching their heads. And, you know, that's why I still have more hair than other kids. You should have seen the kids in my class. They lost a lot.
They're
of
all
their
bald
hairs.
By
all
now.
All bald.
Yeah. So that's pretty interesting to me that you can really take the bright side on that. You know, being orphaned at such a young age, you're able to find that you were able to have access to more opportunities and appreciate that rather than dwell on your losses.
Oh, yeah. Actually, you know, tell you this. You know, I got into extent of actually using my my grades for even more opportunities somehow, because when I came to class, I wasn't really clever, but I was like aware of what is going on already in the class more than others in the class.
You got some street smarts.
So I was doing better in the class because the nuns will also teach me, you know, so I know more. And so when I was in class, I would do really well in the class and I'll focus so that I'll get really good grades. And with these good grades, I would make copies and write letters. Whatever, I would run into addresses, any address out of Africa at the time.
Outside of Africa.
Out of Africa, mm-hmm. Just going out of Africa, you know, anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Australia, whatever, I don't care. Just if I find it anywhere, like, you don't drop any address that came from outside. If I find it, that's mine.
And what will you do with this address
I'm
from
write
far away?
All those copies that I just made with writing letters on them, I'm sending them to wherever that address came from, see? So hopefully I might get a good results out of them.
It's kind of like messages in a bottle. You
exactly.
Take a dress and you write to them and say, would you sponsor me in high school? Is that right?
You do the same thing too, huh?
Well, I don't know because it seems
well,
really clever and resourceful. But I think given the situation, maybe it would occur to me from here In Maine? No, I would not have thought of that.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds exactly like that, like message in the bottle.
Uh-huh.
You know, you just put it in the bottle and it just goes away.
And did it work out? Did you get any sponsorship?
Actually, I did. From United States, obviously, I didn't get nothing, but I got a response back, which is very important, and I will keep the letter. I'll be always, even though they said they cannot help because they're like a huge company and stuff like that. And I was like, I got a letter from America.
Wow. You were really self-empowered.
Oh.
I bet nobody could tell you no. You'd just find another way around.
It was just sad.
So, as a young child, you seem to have insight into your destiny. Can you tell us what you knew and how you knew it? You were telling me earlier what you used to say to your friends.
Because America was so popular when I was growing up, you know, when I was in Uganda, America was popular you will hear of other parts of the world, like China and United Kingdom and Australia and stuff like that. But then America will always be on top of the list, you know, so you will always hear about it. So I'm like, you know, this place here, I'm going to America, whatever this place is, I'm going to. And that's when I was a kid, really, in a primary school, and my friends would laugh. So I'm like, no, I'm going to go. I was like, and they will ask me, how are you going to go there? I said, I will get in a plane and I will get there. It's like, whose plane? Everybody goes in that plane. But I didn't even know. I thought maybe all you do is just go to that plane and walk in. I didn't know that the process and all that stuff. I didn't even expect all of those things. But there was a lot of work.
A lot of work.
Yeah.
A lot of paperwork. That's pretty impressive to me. You're not my first guest who spent his childhood telling people he'd come to America. Mm-hmm. I think there's a, that kind of magic. If you know what you want, it's just so much more likely to happen. And you're clear with your goal.
And from these letters that I actually sent out that I told you earlier, I got three responses, really positive responses from Europe, from England. And all of them are sending me £50 sterling. One was being sent directly to a sponsor who was within, and they go directly to the school and they pay my school. So my school was paid for. Now, another sponsor was sending to my aunt because I was so young. You know, they imagine, what would I do with money, right? So, and then the other one was sending directly to me because that, you know what I mean? So, that £50 sterling that was sent to me, I wasn't drinking, I wasn't doing anything. So, I keep that money. I saved it all those years, and I'm like, this is going to make me accomplish my plans.
You were collecting collateral.
Yeah.
You were making yourself have some leverage for when it was time to go to the United States.
Somehow I knew that going to the United States is going to involve money.
Mm-hmm.
So that's as much as I know.
And so when you went to Kenya after you were in Uganda, how did you use that money to get yourself safely to the refugee camp and then to the United States?
Well, that money started, from northern Uganda. I was coming from the northern Uganda going to Kampala. I'd never been there. So I took a truck, lorry, we call it lorry over there.
Yes.
Here they call it a truck, you know. So it's like a big truck, so you just, people are loaded all the way up on the top, you know. Sometimes like the truck will be like bending over.
Scary.
You're just hanging on, you know. So it brought me all the way to a place called Gulu. It's a Acholi land. People there speak Acholi. So I came from Gulu and then I took a bus from there all the way to Kampala. Without knowing where I was going to live,
mm-hmm.
but I was aware I have money. So, see, but in Africa somehow apparently, which is amazing to me, is like kids even are allowed to go into a bar and purchase alcohol. It doesn't matter what age. See? So I can see your face now.
He's right,
like, what? Like, what?
Yeah,
I should have been a kid. I should have been in Africa growing up, right?
Does it happen very often that kids go in and buy alcohol?
Oh yeah, I mean the relatives can send kids to go get me alcohol. The father will send, go get me alcohol, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go and they'd buy
go
them
an
and
errand.
Bring it and
yeah,
and no problem, you know.
So you'd go in these bars as a kid.
Oh yeah,
with your little wad of money.
Oh yeah, because like you know, at the time I wear like a. Three pair of pants, you see, like one inside, one in the middle, and then one on the top, the top layer. You know,
that's a good strategy. So wear all your clothes so you don't have to carry them.
And then the one that is closer to my skin, that's where the money is. That's a bank with lots of pocket.
Wow.
You really got to beat me and strip me like 3 times to get to my money.
Right. And so, you don't have to be encumbered by carrying a bag with all your stuff in it if you're wearing all your pants.
I only had a small bag with like maybe a few clothes, like maybe one or two in it. Yeah. I didn't really need, because I have already 3 layers.
And it never got cold, so you don't have too many clothes.
I was good.
Mm-hmm. So you go into the bar.
Yeah, so I go into the bar, and first you got to go in, because like, you gotta get the money from inside, you know.
Oh yeah.
And then you gotta count how much you're gonna spend today. So you go into the bathroom, you know. So because you gotta get to the bank.
Yeah. Right, the inner bank.
Yeah, you gotta get to the inner bank to get to the ATM, which is the
my deepest pocket.
Yeah, exactly. You know. So I get there and then I go back to the bank not the bank but
bar.
The bar, and then I'll sit there with everybody and I'll, you know. They will start talking and I'll jump into the conversation, just interesting, and make it funny. So people start enjoying themselves, laughing and whatever. So I'll purchase them alcohol. I didn't drink.
You bought the men alcohol?
Yeah, I buy them alcohol. I'll be like, give them alcohol, you know. So they're like, how are you going to pay for this? I'll be like, don't worry, I got money. They're like, really? I'm like, yep. What do you do? Don't worry. So they will accept, you know, and when they accept it, and here you are telling them funny things, and they're laughing, they're enjoying themselves around you, they welcome you to their home.
Ah, they couldn't resist you.
Exactly.
And your charm.
Yeah.
So you would get a place to sleep and eat.
Yep.
That was pretty clever, James.
Oh, yeah.
For a 15-year-old. Pretty good.
It was amazing.
That was pretty brilliant. And so
sometimes it's funny, but sometimes it's sad.
Well, yes, that a 15-year-old's making his way across a foreign country on his own is lonely, I bet.
It's scary, though. Sometimes.
Yeah, but you would make friends, and then it wasn't so lonely.
It's scary somehow. Like, let me put it this way. Like, sometimes when I get pulled over with the policeman, I'm not scared at the time. I'll talk to the policeman, everything will be okay. And then when I'm driving off, that's where the scary part comes in. We're like, oh, my God, you know. So,
yeah, when you think about it.
I can't believe, you know, what just happened back there. Like, when I get away from it. But, you know, like, after all this trip, and then when I look back, like, that was scary, whatever I was doing.
Yeah.
But it got me here anyways.
You right. know. You had few choices. You picked the ones that were best for you at the time.
Yeah. And I got to tell you one more thing.
Oh, good.
Going through, like buying people alcohol, to the extent they will actually show you how to go. You know, they'll tell you the ways.
The insider scoop of
exactly.
Don't go that way.
How to go, like, because I was trying to get to Kenya. You know, because I heard at the time that there were some refugees who were coming to the United States. So I said, oh, that was an opportunity. So I'm like, okay, there is my shot. I'm going over there. And so when I was coming, these people that I buy alcohol to, they keep me a place. And, I live with them. And then they'll show me the bus. And I come to the bus. And then they go away. So I'll accomplish my mission with the bus drivers. There's a person who collects money. Because you don't buy a ticket.
Mm-hmm.
There is a person at the door actually collecting money, and then he will slap the side of the bus, bam, 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 let's go. That's how we do it over there, that to let the driver know everything is okay. So he will be hanging at the door.
Uh-huh.
You know, he's just, that is the money collector.
Yeah.
See, so I pay him, and then he talks with the driver. I said, I want to get to Kenya. And I was honest, I don't have documents, so how do I get through to Kenya? So they're like, okay, how much luggage do you have? I don't have any luggage, just this small bag. And then they took it as their own. So when we got to the border of Kenya and Uganda, they have a person there. Obviously, I wasn't
like a border guard.
Not really the border guard. Somebody who's doing something illegal.
Oh, uh-huh.
You know, like, I was like a Spanish guy, you know, trying to cross into America sort of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
No papers.
You don't look real Spanish, but
But in Africa, I was at the time, you know, going from Uganda to Kenya. I was like a Spanish crossing from, you know, no documents, trying to get over. So what the bus driver did was he gave me a guy to go around, you know, I'm sorry, I'm saying this on the radio. Now I'm going to mess up for everybody who is coming.
Yeah, it's hard to see their hand signals. They drop you off at one side of the border.
Yes.
And then, you skirt around the road in the woods.
Exactly.
And then you pop out on the Kenyan side and then they pick you up again.
Yes. And then the bus, after he goes through the immigration, will hang out. Everybody will get off to go to the bathroom into the woods.
Uh-huh.
See? There's no really normal bathroom like you guys have here, you know, slash no. You will use the woods.
Yeah.
So everybody get out to the wood, and then they will find that. I'll see now, everybody's getting up, popping up from the woods.
Yeah.
They have used the bathroom now, they're going to the bus. I'm also coming. So we're like, okay, now you can go to the bus. Because there's a guy who's guiding me through all this.
Oh.
And he's already paid by the bus.
Bus people. Driver?
Yeah. So, you know, and then I give
how
him
much,
a tip.
Yeah, how much does it cost then to do that?
Well, at the time, I would say it's cheap because it was like 20 years ago.
Uh-huh.
So, like, I gave him, I can't remember how much I gave him, but it was in Ugandan shilling. It was enough for them to really be happy.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They had a smile in their face. They thought they ripped me off, but I was thinking I'm getting a good deal also here.
Yes, you know? I see you've developed your storytelling abilities across several continents. You're good. You're very good. I'm impressed by your ability to navigate your way through East Africa and the United Arab Emirates and Bahrain to find your way here alone at the age of 15 or 16 years old. And you were able to manage to do that just by your charm and
you're
buying people drinks across the way. So that's pretty clever. So if you're just joining this conversation, welcome. You are listening to New Mainers Speak. I'm Kate Manahan, and my guest today is James Swaka. He was born in South Sudan, raised in Uganda, and found his way to Maine at age 16 alone. After some schooling, he joined the U.S. military, where he served from 1998 to 2006. And since that time, he's been working, raising a family, doing stand-up comedy, and always looking at life with a fresh and unique perspective. So, James, what can you tell us about your job and rank in the U.S. military?
Well, first, when I actually got to the United States, I came from Kenya to United States through Bahrain and all that. There was some delay because they didn't know the process out there in Bahrain. But to long story short, when I got to United States, I was 16 years old. My documents basically was really not my documents. You see, because he has a different first name, Martin, and the age was wrong, which I took advantage of that also, because now it can make me work.
It made you look like you were a little older than you were. So you were an adult rather than a minor?
Yes.
By your paperwork?
Yes.
You knew you were 16.
I knew I was 16.
Okay.
And I have
you were able to work.
I have my birth certificate also with me.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to work and I was able to rent a place. And they told me to go because people are not believing that that's my age, because in today, I would have been 70, retired already.
Oh.
And look at me. It's like, I mean, I know people cannot see me, but you can see me.
Yes.
I mean, I would have been 70 if I didn't change my age. That means I would have been retired by now. We're just sitting here and...
You wish.
You'd be talking to a retired person.
So you came here, and how long were you here before you joined the military?
Well, when I came here, I was 16, and then I waited until I was 19, actually. And then I went into court to get my birth date actually corrected. And then so I went, I joined the military when I was 19.
Uh-huh. And your rank in the military was what?
A corporal.
A corporal.
Yes.
And you were in the Marine Corps?
Yes, I was in the Marine Corps.
Can you tell us what you did?
I was a helicopter mechanic actually.
Cool.
Yeah. But I wouldn't tell girls that. I would tell them I'm a sub shooter, you know.
Oh, sniper. Yeah. It sounds a little tougher.
It sounds tougher.
Yeah.
Because girls like tough guys.
Do they?
Yeah,
all
don't
of
like
them?
a mechanic dirty. No. You like the guy who go out there. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. I think there are all kinds of women out there. Where do you think your sense of humor came from? All your buddies in the military told you you should be a comedian. So where did that come from for you?
Well, to me, it's just when growing up, really, we all lay there looking up at the moon and telling each other stories. Because there's really nothing interesting to do. And we all sleep together. like you find a bunch of boys all sleeping together in, you know, like in the orphanage.
Yeah.
So you find we are all laying there and just and telling each other a story. Who has an interesting story? And
then you always had interesting stories.
Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. You know, so it's just one of those things. You know, and sometimes like other friends of mine also have like really interesting story, and then you sit there, listen to it, and then you laugh. And sometimes you don't even have to laugh; they just tell you a story. Be like, "What? That is scary," you know, stuff mm-hmm. like that. And even growing up, we are not raised by either you're punished by getting beaten, or they lie to you. They basically tell you something that you will believe is true, so you will not do something that you are not expected to do. Like mm-hmm. say, if you flip your if you leave your shoes at the door when you come in, and you take your shoes off, and you leave one of them flip upside down, that your mom will die, and your mom is very important to you. So now you will always make sure your shoes is straight.
I see.
But apparently they just didn't want to know if you step on some doodle, you know.
Yeah.
You
know, they want your shoes on the floor.
I don't know how to say that, but you know. So
right.
Anyway.
Well, that's one motivation, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's so, really different. So you have become a comedian. You've taken classes and done all kinds of things. Do you have a favorite comedian?
I actually do have a favorite comedian. I like Bill Cosby because he's a storyteller, and I'm finding myself to become more and more like him. Mm-hmm. Even though I was actually trying to tell people story quick to laugh, and then sometimes I'm finding that, no, I have to tell them the story longer in order for them to understand it. And then they'll laugh. So I'm finding that I'm becoming more like a storyteller.
Yeah, you have so many rich details.
Yeah, so then I'm like, man, then one day I was watching Bill Cosby. I'm like, I think I'm more like this guy. Maybe if I watch him, he shows me how, you know. So I'm finding that he's more interesting to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always enjoy
even
the storytelling.
The stories that are coming about him.
No, his more recent stories are a little more disturbing. Yeah. But, you know, in the height of his humor,
but that's
he was a household fixture.
That's the way the cookie crumbled, you know
yeah,
what I mean?
It does. So you've performed locally at a number of venues, including Empire on Forest Avenue. I wondered if you could give listeners a couple of tips that you've learned from your observations and from experiences in the classes you've taken on comedy and stand-up comedy to tell us, how can we be more funny?
Oh, I'm actually, I say, to be funny is like, sometimes you can be naturally funny. You will not know why people are laughing, but you're telling them things and they're laughing. Be like, wow, that's great. But sometimes, like, when you go to the study part of it, and then you find that people are doing, like, reverses to stories, and they're doing, like, incongruity, like, making things, like, as you were talking earlier, like, you find a tall person marrying a short person, and whatever is in between, that's incongruity, and people laugh to it. Like, say, an ugly person and a beautiful lady, they get married, or an older guy and a younger lady, whatever is in between is funny. Mm-hmm. That is, when you're telling those stories, I'll talk about this old guy, and then I'm coming to talk about this young lady, and then you'll find that really, you know, it doesn't really fit. So sometimes you find out, oh, I didn't think about it that way. And then people laugh.
Yeah, it's like a surprise.
Exactly. So that is how, you know, like when you study it, you find it is working that way. But sometimes me, I'm finding that I'm actually telling, I'm more funnier if I don't write things down. I just get up on stage and just talk. But then when I write things, and then I'm finding that I'm actually on the stage panicking because I'm finding myself trying to remember jokes that I don't really want to talk about.
Oh, interesting. You're much better just off the cuff.
Yeah, when I see people, I know what kind of things I can talk about.
Yeah.
Like when I see a younger crowd, obviously I'm not going to, you know, I'm going to talk about things that is interesting to them. So when I see an older crowd, I'm going to talk about things that are interesting to them. I'm not going to be talking about, oh, weird this and drag my pants down and do, you know, I'm not going to do that to an older crowd. They're right. Like, oh, this, get out of here, right?
Right.
So every crowd is different.
Yeah, and you feel comfortable just flying by the seat of your pants the way you always have.
There you go.
Right?
Yes.
Wow. So if you let yourself dream big, you know, you work and you have a family and you also do comedy, what would your life look like in 10 years?
Well, I obviously I'm already too deep into more like comedy and more like I'm, because I've always seen community as like a parent to me, because that is the thing that really raised me, because I really didn't have like specific people like a parent here like to raise me. So I just see the entire community as something that raised me. So I want to do more things that helps towards, you know, community. Like say, if I have power, I'll say I'll build a big hospital.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people can go in there and don't worry about the insurance part of it. You know, things like that. Like, I mean, you will have a big heart like that, but sometimes you can't get one.
Mm-hmm.
But if I can get something even small that I can actually share with the community, I could. Like, now I'm trying to do more shows with my friend African Dandara. So in order to raise also sometimes awareness and also to bring more Africans into doing things like we do and into the community and like making people laugh, to me is great. You know,
that's a gift. That you let go of your worries for a minute and relax.
And, African Dandara will also entertain people with music and stuff and bring more children to sing. And that is something that we really focus on at this time while we're also growing. And we hope that we can even be able to grow with the children around us if they can actually, you know, put more effort into doing the same thing that we do. Like me growing up with no parents, I would have given up. But I didn't give up because I've seen things around me that are not giving up, you know.
Yeah, you're a very determined person. And I imagine you'll get to right where you want to go. James, you're so bright and observant, and I think you notice every little detail. I love how you can endure so much loss and change and still be resilient enough to laugh and enjoy your unique perspective on life. I wish you all the best on your way to fame, and I can't think of one reason your dream isn't possible. Thank you for being my guest today.
You're welcome, and thank you for having me on the show.
And I will link to James's website for interested parties who are putting together an event and looking for a comedian. Do you want to tell us your website?
It's swakajcomedy.com.
SWAKAJcomedy.com. Wonderful.
And it's going to be linked to my friend African Dandara's site also, so you will view a lot of interesting stuff together there.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. And thank you all for listening. Please join us each week for similar interviews with diverse members of our community. And I'm Kate Manahan, closing today's program with a song James has selected for us. James, could you please quickly introduce the song you selected as we wrap things up?
The song is actually is just talking about it doesn't matter whether you fall. You can always get up, or, you know, it doesn't matter whether you stumble, you know, you'll still move on. So basically, something is like an encouraging song to me.
In a skin at the international. Don't scare me. We are the leaders, so you can lead away. We can deliver, so you can deliver. We are one. We fear no man. Don't scare me. We are the doctor, you cannot doctor. We are the teacher, you can teach away. We are one. Spin at
one. Double the trouble, come in, double the trouble.
Double trouble.
It's a shiro, come in, double the trouble.
Double trouble.
Double the trouble, come in, double the trouble.
Double trouble.
Never lose focus, you're looking at the future. Rise up with the money, money, the alarm of your rooster. Like nobody call them, you pray, I can say you a loser. Never be a loser, now you love, you can maneuver.
No matter how you stumble, you never fall. No matter what them talk, you don't move that all.
And no matter how they put me, the general. Me not scared of the international.
Yes, I am.
Double the trouble, come in, double the trouble.
Double trouble.
It's a shiro, come in, double the trouble.
Double trouble.
Double the trouble, come in, double the trouble.
Double trouble.
Double the trouble, come in, double the trouble.
Serious business, we know the real drama. I'm an American nuclear, could cause you trauma. For the young and old, older, Ada and your grandma. We working so hard, so we wake up in my pajama. No matter how you stumble, you never fall.
No matter what they talk, you don't move that all.
And no matter how they put me, the general.
Still stand tall, not afraid at all. Don't scare me.
Double the trouble, come in, double the trouble.
Double trouble.
It's a shiro, come in, double the trouble.
Double trouble.
Double the trouble, come in, double the trouble.
Double trouble.
Double the trouble, come in, double the trouble.
We are the leaders, so you can lead the way. We can deliver, so you can deliver. We
are
one. We fear no man. Don't scare me.
We are the doctor, you cannot doctor me.
We are the teacher, you can teach.
We are one. Spin as far.
Aromatic born double the trouble. You're not long government with double the trouble.
Double the trouble.
Double the trouble.
Serious business, we know the
brother for your drama. I'm a lyrical nuclear cool cause you trauma. For the young and old, older, elder and your grandma. We working so hard so we wake up in my pyjama. No matter how you stand, boy, you never fall. No matter what you talk, you don't move that hard. And no matter how you cook, you the general. I still stand tall, not afraid at all.
Remix!
Double the trouble, come in, double the trouble.
Double trouble.
Double the trouble, come in, double the trouble.
Double trouble.
Double the trouble, come in, double the trouble.
Double trouble.
Double the trouble, come in, double the trouble.
Follow the rhythm with the doctor DJ Shiro, come in general.